You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Times Higher Education issue review podcast for the 18th to the 31st of December 2014. It's the last podcast of the year, and with that in mind, a very Merry Christmas to all our podcast listeners. It's not really an issue review in the true sense this week, since the edition is dominated by one topic. That's the results of the 2014 Research Excellence Framework. To that end, I'm joined by Deputy Features Editor Paul Jump. He's our all-round ref expert, and THE Editor John Gill. So the ref will shape your institution's profile for years to come. 191,232 research outputs by 52,077 academics and 155 higher education institutions have been considered. Paul, in one word, what does all that boil down to?
If that counts as a word.
That probably is a word. Yeah, seriously, though, there are pages and pages of analysis in this week's issue, but your lead news story, Paul, focuses on the inclusion of impact as a measure in 2014, unlike in 2008 research assessment exercise. What does that mean? Is it revolution or more evolution?
Well, it's revolutionary in the sense that it's certainly upped everybody's score a lot. That sort of leaps out at you. The percentage of submissions rated 4-star this time, 30% overall compared to 17% last time. I mean, people's output scores have gone up as well, but impact has certainly made a big impact, appropriately enough. And it has been ranked consistently higher than the output scores. And that's particularly true in the life sciences, actually. You see that at subject level, and also you see it in our overall table in terms of the institutions right at the top of the list. You know, if you look at who's done really well on impact, Institute of Cancer Research, London School of Hygiene, St George's, Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, you know, they're all life science places, and I guess that's, you know, that was all predicted. People always thought the life sciences would do very well out of it, but that's certainly been borne out. But in terms of whether it's turned the sort of ranking on its head overall, it hasn't really. I mean, the top of the tree is still, well, Institute of Cancer Research, but then that was there last time as well. Imperial, LSE, Oxford, Cambridge. So, and even if you look lower down, I mean, the former polytechnics haven't really made much ground, to be honest, compared to how they did last time. I mean, the big movers really are some of the research intensives that have sort of shuffled around.
I mean, we rank them, don't we, John, by grade point average is one of the systems we use. Hefke just puts the stats out there and allows people to look through it. What approach do we take, and why do we sort of take ranking approach to it?
Well, as I think we say in this week's issue, you could just stick all the raw data out there, but really I think people look to us to actually bring some meaning to it. And we've had for some time, certainly in the RAE 2008, we had this table of excellence, which is based on the THE GPA, which does bring a sort of ranking. You know, you can see who's performed best. I think one of the really interesting things in the tables we've produced this time are that you can see the different strategies that institutions have taken. So those that do very, very well on GPA, yes, they're some of the really big, you know, research stars that you'd expect, the kind of UCLs and Cambridges and Oxfords of this world. But you also get some people very high up in the GPA ranking who have hit those heights because they've been very selective in the number of academics that they've actually put in. You know, they've just been cherry picking the sort of people that they think are going to get the 4-star results. And that shows up in our ranking too. So as well as the GPA, we do have a research power indicator, which Paul's and our colleagues in the data analysis team have put together. And that gives you more of a feeling perhaps for the universities that are actually going to take the bulk of the QR cash. And actually, in some ways, perhaps, you know, some people would say is a more honest assessment of you know, real weighty research strength, you know, as opposed to the slight game playing that some institutions have gone in for. I mean, you know, there's been clear decisions to be made. Are you going for GPA, which gets you the reputation and the prestige, and perhaps will gain you places in the domestic league tables that are produced, which take these sort of things into account? Or are you going for kind of, you know, a larger submission, putting in more of your researchers and potentially going for more QR cash as well?
And Paul, you picked out King's College London, soon to be King's London, we should point out. There's a story about that on our website, causing a little bit of uproar. You picked out King's College London as one of the star performers this year, arguably the biggest winner, you say.
Yes, I mean, as John just said, I mean, a lot of institutions have gone up on GPA by going down on research power, essentially. By that means, you know, submitting fewer people. But King's are the one institution that have managed to go up both on GPA, go up significantly, I should say, both on GPA and on research power. You know, on GPA, they're up to 7th from joint 22nd last time, but they've also really increased their research power very significantly as well. They're among, I think, about the top 6 or 7 for that as well in the country. So, yeah, they're doing really well.
And then I suppose an example of an institution that has gone for prestige is Cardiff, which has risen very spectacularly, really. I mean, in terms of GPA, they've risen from joint 22nd in the 2008 Table of Excellence to 6th this time, you know, really spectacular. But the way they've done that, if you look at the numbers behind the data, is that they've drastically reduced the number of people they've submitted. So they've gone from having 1,030 full-time equivalent academics submitted in 2008 to just 738 this time. Mm. So clearly that has a knock-on effect on research power and probably on the amount of QR cash they'll take as well.
Yeah. So you mentioned King's College there at 7th GPA, Cardiff University 6th. The top 5 is made up of Cambridge, Oxford, LSE, Imperial and the Institute of Cancer Research. We also have a top 10 of Impact, all available in the news spread, plus more tables than you could shake a stick at in the feature, which actually runs to about 48 pages.
Yeah, well, the reason for that, of course, is that that's actually got, you know, the full breakdown of every single institution by subject panel, you know, across all 36 subject panels. So there's real, you know, rich data in the issue.
Also looks at both impact and output as well as the overall scores at subject level. So there's a lot for heads of department to get their teeth into there.
Yeah, and we've sort of mentioned here what it means for university. I mean, I suppose what it comes down to is this is going to impact on individual scholars, individual researchers as well. We had a piece online this week, a survey of 2,000 academics, 23% saying they expect redundancies as a result of REF. That goes up to 25% when you just survey Russell Group academics. I think there are about 450 of them. They really do sort of, well, they can make or break a scholar's career, can't they, John?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose in terms of, you know, the cash that comes in through REF results and QR, clearly that will have some bearing on, you know, the university's priorities over the next 5-6 years, which departments they invest in, which expand, which shrink, and all that sort of thing. So clearly there are implications there for individual academics and individual departments, and I think that's why this is such a kind of, you know, get up in the middle of the night, 1 minute past midnight type of event for the sector, to sort of look at the tables and see how has my university done, how's my department done, and even, you know, potentially how have I done. But certainly that's the case. I mean, we all know about the kind of, you know, staffing turmoil that goes on in the run-up to the REF audit cut-off point, which was, what, 18 months ago now, where sort of research stars are hired and put in place to sort of maximise your quality profile. But I think the sector's kind of bracing itself for another period where there's likely to be some churn now that the outcome are known. The funding itself won't be allocated and dished out until what is that, March, in the spring?
In March, it'll be in a HEFCE's annual grant announcement, and I think they haven't made the decision yet on whether the funding formula will be changed from what it currently is or not. A certain amount of speculation that they might only fund 4-star, but that's all very much up in the air, I think, at the moment.
I mean, it is interesting when you look at we've got some tables on our front spread this week showing how the national profile has changed, and it's quite dramatic, isn't it? What proportion of REF assessed research is 3-star or 4-star now? I mean, it has gone up a lot. So
yeah, it has. Yeah, there's potentially an issue there about grade inflation, I suppose, but that may have its impact also on the funding formula. Yes, they may take the view that since that 4-star percentage is such a large proportion, that they might as well just concentrate all the funding on that.
Indeed. Well, there's plenty more to get your teeth stuck into in this week's magazine. In our opinion section, we have University of Bristol Professor of Political Economy Paul Grout. He says we should have a REF every year in order to perhaps make it less burdensome and less of a moment, as John was just describing. We also have a cover feature which runs to 48 pages, tables ranking institutions by impact, by subjects. We've got methodology in there, plenty for you to get stuck into. The second feature we should probably mention this week as well asks what university lavatories can reveal about the academy. It's rather and finally moment to this podcast.
Now for something completely different.
You can read that at your convenience, if you'll pardon the pun. John, it's by John Sutherland, who's Emeritus Lord Northcliffe Professor of Modern English Literature at UCL. What brought this on?
Well, you know, it's 100 pages of THE this week, perfect toilet reading. We thought we'd give you something to sit down. And also we gave our subs the opportunity to do the wonderful headline, A Game of Thrones, A Game of Porcelain Thrones. I think, Paul, this is Paul's special issue this week. He's done all the ref coverage, and you were also responsible for this feature, Paul. Came in from John Sutherland, of course, who's very eminent, not the sort of thing he normally writes about.
No, he was very keen to get it in, though. And yes, as John says, I think there's a bit of light relief to the RAF, particularly given the heavy use of toilets, no doubt, this week in the run-up to the RAF results. We thought it was appropriate.
But he's making the point, well, it's a very light-hearted point, but that you can actually tell quite a lot about universities and the way that universities have changed over the years. He uses three, he says he knows the toilets of three institutions very well, Edinburgh, UCL and Caltech, and has various anecdotes, some cleaner than others, about what you can tell from those universities. From their bogs.
Give too much away, don't let too much leak out, as it were. You can read that this week in our features section. If you want to talk about anything we've discussed, particularly the ref, you can do so at timeshighereducation.co.uk, where you can comment on stories. You'll find us on Twitter at timeshighered. We've had people sending in rhymes about the ref. You can use the hashtag refrhyme. We've had people telling us their own stories about the ref. That's hashtag myrefstory. What more could you possibly want than that? You can also find us on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Google+, all the usual places. But until the new year, that's all for this THE Issue Review podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.